Hello and welcome to the 14th episode of the TFG1 podcast, recorded on April 24th, 2009. I am your host, Michael Blanchard, with a special guest co-host, Michael Wilson. Hello, Michael.
Hi, it's not actually April 24th, it's actually...
Yes, we know it's not actually... Yeah, but that's when it's the record dates are.
So, oh, we've recorded on the 24th?
Yes.
You mean it's published on the 24th?
Yeah, no, what... Yeah, both.
Fantastic.
We record them early, but we post-date them.
You want to try it again?
No, we're just going to leave this the way it is. Stop.
You can edit it, right?
Hello, this is Michael Blanchard back with you again on the TFG1 podcast. I am tired of doing these by myself, so I have my co-host with me who is a podcast newbie, and he is kind of raw, so just kind of bear with us. His name is Michael Wilson. Hello, Mike.
Hi there.
Now, what do you prefer, Michael, Mike?
I go by Michael.
Okay. All right. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, like what kind of Transformers fan you are, and like what's your favorite shows out of the fandom and all that stuff.
Oh, okay. I dig it all. You know, I collect pretty much everything. I have an extensive collection, probably more than most people that I know of, and there's a lot of people out there that I know that have a large collection.
Yeah, yours is by far the biggest I have ever seen.
I have thousands.
Yeah, that's putting it mildly. You can almost have millions.
I wouldn't go that far. But yeah, there's a lot of them. And, you know, I recognize it's a sickness. you know, there's something wrong with me, very, very wrong with me. And I have way too many Transformers. But on the other side, it's the only thing I collect. You know, I don't have, like, the G.I. Joe and the He-Man and the Indiana Jones. It's just Transformers.
Well, that's cool. That's good. I mean, you know, and it's always good to be down with the sickness.
That's right. I'm insane in the memory.
Let's see if people can get that reference. Let's not say what it's from. Let's see if people can get that down with the sickness reference. Of course, most people that listen will.
Yeah, go back and watch Dawn of the Dead. It's on the soundtrack.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I was tired of just having myself drone on, even though I love Generation 1, and I love rewatching these cartoons. I just wanted someone, you know, to kind of bounce off of, and, you know, just have somebody, you know, here with me doing it, and unfortunately, Steve/Megatron... could not do... Actually, he didn't want to do episode 14. He didn't like a majority of the episodes that we're going to be reviewing today.
Shocking. These are some of the best episodes.
I know. I know. There hasn't been any real email from as far as feedback. You can always go over to the PredaconEmpire.com forums and join there. And there's tons of TFG1 stuff there. Really isn't anything going on with me so far. What's been going on with you, Michael?
Well, I just got a Briscoe in the mail from Thailand, and I was very excited. Briscoe being the head for Fangry. He's one of the junior headmasters at Decepticon. And this guy's been sitting on my shelf for about 3 years without a head. And I finally got one, so that's kind of exciting.
Briscoe County Robot Head.
Briscoe, yeah, that's right. It's Bruce Campbell sitting on top of the giant robot.
Oh my god!
Yeah, with the big chin. He says, "My name is Bruce."
Big chin, huh? That reminds me of Sentinel Prime.
I think Sentinel Prime's chin was based on Bruce Campbell.
Probably.
He's only missing the chainsaw arm, and he'd have it all.
You know, it would probably be beneficial to animate it if Bruce Campbell actually voiced Sentinel Prime.
Oh, you know, that would just piss off all the Tick fans. But no, I do think Bruce Campbell would be an awesome voice for... You know, we should talk to Derek White about that and say, dude, Bruce Campbell. Think about it.
Yeah, really.
We need Bruce Campbell on animated saying "Hail to the King, baby."
That's what we need. Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. Actually, my only Bruce Campbell watching has been from The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr.
Oh, you're not an Evil Dead fan?
I'm not a horror fan, so.
Dude, you are missing out.
I don't do horror. No. My mom made me watch Freddy when I was like 5 years old, and that scarred me for life.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so I do not do horror. Well, you got anything else to say that you want to say, Michael?
No, that pretty much wraps it up. That was my excitement for the day.
All right, we're going to get into some episodes today.
Astrotrain! Look out for those asteroids!
Well, frag my heat shield! Get a look on that, Pipsqueak, the Autobot symbol!
In this part of the galaxy?
Our sensors show no sign of life!
Exercise caution! They may be deceiving our sensors!
It sure looks like a ghost planet.
Too bad. I was looking forward to blasting a few Autobots.
It's not like the Autobots to leave a whole city to decay.
It's covered with inscriptions. Too bad none of us reads ancient Autobot.
Starscream! Keep your grubby fingers off that. It could be a booby trap.
What trap? This is a prehistoric communication device, you uneducated dolt.
If Cybertron be your home, far away, never roam. Hear my message, listen and fear. Danger comes, the end is near. Just like us, you soon will rust. All shall be turned to dust.
What is this on my chest hole?
It looks like some sort of rust.
That is ridiculous! We are rust-proof! Placing my chest won't be enough! Nor will your minimal knowledge! I need an expert! Order the Staticons to seize Perceptor and bring him to me! Do as I say!
Yahoo! Come on, Aerobots! We're gonna spray old Lady Liberty!
That non-functioning old robot?
She's no robot. She's a hollow statue the Earth humans constructed.
Okay, people, this is a mutiny. No, no, a hijack. I mean, we're taking over this boat. Snap to it, everybody, into the captain's cabin.
Coral Stop will keep the Statue of Liberty safe from acid rain or anything else that's harmful.
How did you ever come up with the formula, Perceptor?
I must apologize, but I am unable to reveal anything about the compound.
Hey, fellows! Catch this wild action!
Hey, what do you think you're doing? A Stunticon!
You got it! And here's greetings from Megatron!
I'm trapped!
You can stay laughing! Welcome, Perceptor.
Please, dispense with the formalities. You are my mortal enemy, and...
You have a unique opportunity, Perceptor, to gain peace in return for a favor.
What sort of favor?
Solve this little problem of mine.
If you're serious about peace, Megatron, then begin by surrendering your new weapon.
If you cure me, the weapon is yours.
Very well. You've been infected by a metallic plague, Megatron.
Impossible! Only organic forms of life can be infected by disease.
This is a rare metallic infection. Legend has it, it wiped out entire races of robots, like the Black Plague did to humans. It's Cosmic Rust.
First up today, we have Cosmic Rust, and according to the little booklet that comes with the DVD, the little blurb in there says, Astrotrain inadvertently infects Megatron with an ancient rusting disease that he picked up on a mission to deep space. Megatron kidnaps Perceptor, forcing the Autobot scientist to cure him with a new chemical the Autobots created to prevent corrosion. And the first bullet point, first couple bullet points I have for this episode are... as I just said, to begin the episode, Megatron and a bunch of the Decepticons are traveling an Astrotrain to a distant planet. This planet has a giant Autobot symbol on it. Can you be any more obvious?
You can see it from space!
Exactly! I mean, this thing is almost half... It takes up half that side of the planet.
And they land, and there's no electricity. And it's like, how did they light up a giant Autobot signal the size of a continent? How does that work?
It's just weird.
I mean, is it like Jupiter? I mean, do you have a giant Autobot insignia-shaped storm that spins continuously on the planet? That doesn't make any sense. But, you know, I for plot purposes, sure, I'll buy that.
Yep. The Decepticons are very leery of being on the planet. Starscream finds a communications device and activates a message from an ancient Autobot. Okay, didn't you have something to say about that? Didn't you tell me something off-air about when Starscream goes over to the control panel? Doesn't he start humping it or something?
No, he doesn't hump the control panel. He humps the lightning
bug.
Oh, he finds that lightning bug, and he's like, I'm just going to fuck this lightning bug right here, man. He's like, you know, it's been a while, and we're not going to discover female Autobots for a while, so I'm just gonna bang the hell out of this lightning bug. The ancient Autobot... Though he's you know kind of cryptic.
Yeah, very cryptic
as far as what he says. But you would think that, you know, they would get the hint. Let's get the hell out of here. I don't think we should be here. It's fun.
Yeah,
I think
really.
It's supposed to be scary.
Yeah, well, with season two coming to a close. I should have mentioned in the intro that we are reviewing the final five episodes of season two. So. With these final five episodes, everything started getting a little bit more scarier and a little bit more spacier before the movie. But I digress, actually. They find a lightning bug weapon and steal it. As Astrotrain leaves the planet, an asteroid is coming up behind them, and Megatron shoots the lightning bug weapon at it, shattering it. Two pieces of the asteroid hit Astrotrain and Megatron. You're not supposed to shoot... a giant-ass lightning weapon at a giant-ass asteroid, knowing that it's going to split into two pieces.
Well, in his defense, he didn't really know that.
Well...
I mean, if you think, I'm going to shoot this and it's going to explode in the shrapnel and perforate me, then you probably wouldn't shoot it. But the question becomes, why the hell is there an asteroid following them? Is it a sentient asteroid? Is the cosmic rust sometimes...
I think it is. I think that's part of the plot point.
It's an intelligent asteroid that chases them?
Well, no, not that it's an intelligent asteroid that chases them. The fact that the cosmic rust is on the asteroid. And I believe it does get on Astrotrain, but I'm not for sure.
Yeah, it looked to me like the only one who was really infected was Megatron.
It was Megatron,
and he was having a rough time of it.
They barely get back to Earth, and Megatron demands that the Stunticons kidnap Perceptor to analyze the disease Megatron has. Perceptor tells the evildoer, yes, I said evildoer, that he has been infected with metallic plague called cosmic rust. Okay, yeah. Perceptor realizes that Megatron's lightning bug heat ray is the energy source that the cosmic rust germs are feeding off of. Perceptor says that they should destroy it before he cures Megatron. What are you laughing at?
No, I'm just thinking. He's like, well, that's my new weapon. I'm not letting you destroy my new weapon. It's like, dude, you have other weapons. you have the fusion cannon on your arm that you know pretty much powered by black hole. That's pretty powerful in and of itself. I don't see why you just don't use that. You don't really need the giant bug, you know, aside from you know, placating Starscream's hormonal urges.
God.
Starscream needs it, man. He's sitting up all night with it.
Wow.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. He's very protective of it. Entertainment.
He's
exactly.
You know what? No, you can't have it. No, it's mine. It's mine. It's like, it makes me wonder exactly. Yeah, is there an ulterior motive there? Is there something else he's planning? But they never really get into that in these episodes.
Well, you know, G1 Megatron is not the smartest cookie in the box. However, the leader isn't thrilled at this. Perceptor gives the leader the Corastop that he and the other Autobots have created. Megatron and the other Decepticons are about to be cured. Cosmos is flying through space, and he radios Blaster to tell him that there is no more antibodies to make the Corastop anywhere in the known universe. I do remember this. You were talking to me about this off-air. It wasn't Perceptor. It was Cosmos.
It was Cosmos. He said...
And I remember Cosmos saying antibody.
He said ingredient X.
No, he didn't.
He did.
He didn't.
Dude, I'm still going to play it for you.
No, you're not. I'll play it back later, and I will, you know, I'll recant myself, but he said antibody.
He actually says there's no more ingredient X.
Whatever.
And, you know, and everyone, well... You know, Blaster's like, well, Perm's not going to like that. Yeah. But, I mean, to digress, back where you have Megatron, he says, oh, I'm not feeling very good. Perceptor says, here, try some of this. And he just pulls it out of nowhere. I mean, I'm sure he's got it stuck in subspace or in his ass or somewhere. But the last of the stuff available, they don't have anymore. They can't make anymore. And he says, oh, here, have some of this and rub it on your head and your body and such. And then he becomes all nice and shiny.
I do like the fact when Megatron is infected that I believe it was either Soundwave or Starscream tries to hold his hand, and his fucking hand just falls right off. I love that.
No, he was just, I don't know if he was shaking his hand at Perceptor, but the hand fell off, and Perceptor, like an idiot, picks it up.
I thought somebody was trying to hold his hand and it fell off.
No, Perceptor picks it up and he looks at it and it's like, dude, you know this stuff is covered in flesh-eating zombie germs, you know, and you pick it up with your bare hands. I'd be looking around for some salad tongs or something to pick up the nasty, gross, deteriorated, severed hand of Megatron so that I wouldn't get it all over myself. And what do you know, in the next scene, what happens? He's tied to a bomb covered in the shit. It's your own fault. You should have been playing with it.
Yeah. Then the aerial bots, who I didn't think were in this episode at first, are filling in Optimus Prime on what they found by following Blitzwing in an attempt to rescue Perceptor. When Megatron contacts Optimus Prime and tells him that he is giving Perceptor back, but at noon, the bomb attached at the end of his microscope will blow him to bits.
That was genius.
Yeah, it was.
It's like, you know, I got this trap, and he's probably going to be dead by 12:15, so you better get there by noon.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome.
When the Autobots get to Perceptor, Prime attempts to save him, but Perceptor tells him that he'll be infected. Optimus saves Perceptor anyway and takes him back to the Autobot base. Teletran 1 finds out and explains where the cosmic rust germs come from. Teletran... then basically malfunctions because of Prime touching it. Ratchet and Blaster are infected too, but this is because Megatron is outside the base with the heat ray letting the Autobots suffer.
See, they never actually clarify, is it the energy from the bug, or is it the heat ray itself that's causing the spread of the disease?
Well, Perceptor said it was the energy emitting from the bug.
Right, so you would think that the best way to make them suffer would be to move the bug inside. Here's my ultimate weapon. Oh, by the way, don't stand too close to it. Kind of defeat the purpose, considering that he was willing to give up his own hand to keep the bug. But
yes. Let's see. What else? What was it? Okay. At the Decepticon base, Megatron learns from Laserbeak that the Autobots will be saved if they can get some of the Coruscant off of the statue. Oh, that's why they didn't try to make more. They went to go scrape Lady Liberty's ass to get some of the Coruscant off of it. That's what it was.
They have the matter regenerator, or the matter duplicator.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so if they can just get a little bit off of Statue of Liberty, they can they can make as much as they want, despite the fact that nobody seems to think this thing works. But that's the giant plot hole involved. It's like, what is this matter replicator do? Could I possibly use it to create as much energy as I could possibly want? Oh no, it doesn't work that way. No, that would kill off the entire premise of every episode.
The Autobots are already at the statue when the Decepticons get there, and the battle ensues. The Aerialbots merge into Superion and destroy the lightning bug heat ray, forcing the Decepticons to retreat. The Autobots get the cure and save the Statue of Liberty all at the same time, thus ending this episode. And we are going to stop here.
Okay.
Now for our thoughts on this episode. As I mentioned in the synopsis, seeing what the cosmic rust did to Megatron was just funny. And he looks almost as bad as when Prime beats him down in the movie. And I know we haven't gotten to the movie yet, and we will in episode 16, but yeah. The cosmic rust effects were very unique and cool to see. I laughed so hard when Megatron's hand fell off. I think one of the more funny moments was when Blaster says he is too young to rust.
Technically, it's supposed to be impossible for any of them to rust. Which, you know, is what Megatron brings up in the beginning. He's like, I can't be rusting. And then, you know, his hand falls off.
So what are your thoughts on this episode?
Well, there was a few neat, interesting moments there. One that I thought was funny was, you know, Perceptor is trying to get the matter duplicator to work properly. And, you know, it's fading out, and I'm assuming because it's infected with the rust. And he just hauls off and kicks it. Just like a jukebox, just smack the hell out of it, and it pops up and says, oh, okay, I'll work now.
Yep.
I thought that was funny. And the toward the end, you know, the Decepticons are going to attack the Statue of Liberty to destroy it so that the Autobots can't get the Coruscant, or can't get a sample of the Coruscant to duplicate. And, you know, they all kind of pop up from behind the limbs of the statue, which I thought was funny. You have Prime kind of hanging off the top of the statue, dangling there, shooting at Menasor, which I thought was funny.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
I predict this will happen in live action version in the next Bay movie. You'll have this awful, god awful, ugly Bayformer Optimus Prime hanging off the crown of the Statue of Liberty in Transformers 3. Wait for it.
hopefully Transformers 3 will have somebody else directing it instead of fucking Bay.
Oh no, wait, man! He's got to be like Raimi. He's got to have that trilogy.
No. He only needs the sequel.
No, Jackson's got one. Raimi's got one. He's going for the trilogy. He's going for the hat trick.
Yeah. All right, on to the next episode.
You're a fool, Starscream, if you think that anyone will ever follow your orders.
What happened? Yes, Megatron exiled me. Me, Starscream. He made a fool out of me in front of the other Decepticons. They'll never respect me as a leader now. What the? A wing from an old fighter plane the flesh creatures used in their wars. There must be more of this stuff lying around here. reminds me of that two-faced loudmouth Blitzwing. Yes. If Megatron can have his Blitzwing, so can I. Me and what army? I'll show him what army.
Up next is Starscream's Brigade, and according to the little booklet, Megatron can no longer stand Starscream's treachery and banishes the second-in-command to Guadalcanal. That's what it is, Guadalcanal. They don't separate the words, so whatever. In the South Pacific, Starscream discovers that the remains of several World War II vehicles and decides to create his own team of loyal subjects, the Combaticons. And before we get into the synopsis, I must point out that the Combaticons were in, they were in an episode of the cartoon that Steve and I talked about last episode. I forget which one it is exactly. If you want to find out which one that is, you can go back and listen to TFG1 Podcast Episode 13, now available on iTunes and ParticleEmpire.com. But yeah, it's a complete fuck-up as far as the continuity. I didn't remember which one it was. It was Aerial Assault. But
so he appeared, or did they?
The Combaticons. All of the Combaticons. Blastoff, Swindle, all of them appeared in Aerial Assault before they were even ever built in this episode.
That's funny.
Yes. So, we start this episode off in the Guadalcanal. In 1943, World War II is going on, and we see...
In black and white.
Yes, that was very, very cool.
Nice touch.
Yep. We see an amazing aerial battle and fighting going on. Then it fast-forwards through time to 1985 at the same location. At the Decepticon stronghold, Starscream is running off at the mouth, as usual, about how he could be a better leader than Megatron. I've said this plenty of times before in past episodes. I am so sick and tired of the Megatron-Starscream power struggle. I am, like, so sick of it. First of all, I want to just shoot fucking Starscream and get it out of the way. Second of all, I want to shoot Megatron in the motherfucking foot because he is so stupid. Why doesn't he just shoot the
Well, it's part of the dynamic of the two characters that they feed off of each other.
Yeah, I know, but it's frustrating.
It makes for good TV.
Fucking frustrating. Yeah, that's too. That's true too. The Decepticon leader turns his back on Starscream, and the sniveling bot fires upon the leader, sending him crashing to the ground. Starscream declares victory, but Megatron is not beaten so easily. I did laugh my ass off at this. Because then Megatron returns fire on Starscream, temporarily deactivating him. Megatron then tells Soundwave to have Laserbeak get Starscream out of his sight. The Birdbot flies over the island where the remnants of the World War II battles took place and drops Starscream. Comes to realizing that Megatron has exiled him, and he finds all the old battle equipment from World War II. Starscream builds his own army of bots. It really shows off his scientist stuff in this. As far as...
Oh, the fact that he was a scientist, yep. And he has the know-how to do this type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
What drives me crazy is, he puts all these pieces together out of, old parts, and, he's got an old plane, and the plane actually turns into a helicopter, and it made me think, didn't they have helicopters in World War II? Maybe they didn't. I don't think they did. Okay, yeah. So they didn't actually have helicopters in World War II, but at the same time, they didn't have space shuttles either. So you have these old rusted out vehicles that kind of turn into... Well, I mean, they start off as authentic World War II vehicles. They kind of turn into modern vehicles.
Yep.
In a sense that, how cool would it be if you had a World War II Bruticus?
Yeah.
That was literally made out of... wait a minute. Vortex is... Yeah. I mean, if they actually had... Like, Vortex was... an old World War II level fighter plane, and kills me. I just forgot his name. What's the leader's name?
I don't know, but I really can't talk too much about Vortex, because...
Onslaught.
Yeah, oh, so, Onslaught.
Well, but I mean, as far as Onslaught, Onslaught was a half-track. And he turns from he was from becoming a World War II level half-track into, you know, the semi-truck with the guns on the back. And, you know, it would be really cool if we had World War II vehicles that were, were Combaticons.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool.
They did something very similar in the comic books.
Yeah.
But so we won't get into that here.
He then goes to the space... Starscream then goes... What?
I said I'm rambling.
Well, stop rambling, damn it. It's not...
I'm sorry.
I told you about this all week long, that one night we were going to record, and I even asked you this morning when you were at work and sober if we were going to record tonight, and you said yes. And you let your wife talk you into drinking and getting drunk and before you...
there was no drunkenness involved. Hey man, I'm a grown man. I know my limits.
Oh, I know.
I'm talking to some little college kid here who...
Oh no, I know.
To the point of
I'm just hanging on. Hell.
I know.
All right. Just then, playing. Starscream then goes to the space bridge location and demands to be allowed to use it. On Cybertron, Starscream gets the personality chips of several renegade Decepticons that Megatron had imprisoned. Starscream will implant these personalities into the bots he has built. He puts the personality chips into the vehicle modes and tells them to transform. First of all, it was already established that Vector Sigma is the only one that can grant personalities and life. Now, I understand that these personality chips were from different actual molds or bodies, but I don't know. That was just weird to me.
I don't think they actually established that part of the mythos yet. I mean, the idea that Vector Sigma can bestow a spark
did.
Did they already?
Yep.
I thought that came later. Like post movie.
Nope. It was the key to Vector Sigma. it was that two parter.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, as far as
where the aerial bots and the Stunticons were created.
See, now I had always retcon post rationalized it to say that these personality chips were kind of like a spark chamber, and that you could pull the personality out of a robot just by yanking the spark chamber out of it.
Yeah.
And you could store it indefinitely. The spark never dies.
Yeah, I could see that.
But I don't think that idea had been established that far back.
No, I don't think it had either. Starscream has created the Combaticons, Brawl, Swindle, Blastoff, Vortex, and Onslaught. Starscream wants them to follow him in dethroning Megatron, but the Combaticons ask what's stopping them from pounding Starscream into a pile of dirt.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Actually, I was reading that, and it looked like a deflowering Megatron.
No, it's, like, it's dethroning.
Megatron looks nothing like a giant metal bug, so, he's already kicked your ass once this episode. You don't want to try that shit on him.
To which the evildoer replies that he hasn't equipped them with energy absorbers, so they can't refuel. At a dedication ceremony to Optimus Prime, Jazz and Cliffjumper are there to cut the ribbon when Starscream and his army attacks them, kidnapping Jazz and Cliffjumper.
With the intention of stealing their...
Energy absorbers. Energy absorbers, yes. First of all, Jazz has a kick-ass sound system that no one can stand except for him and Spike. Why the hell didn't he just friggin' transform and blare the music?
They had their asses handed to them pretty handily, but I think that was the point.
Yeah, it was.
They wanted to show that these guys, these new Combaticons are pretty powerful.
Yep.
And they can take on seasoned veterans Jazz and Cliffjumper.
Yep. At the island, the Combaticons and Starscream celebrate the victory, but the Combaticons start to argue, and Starscream tells them that there will be no energy absorbers for any of them until they can capture three more Transformers. So clearly, Starscream doesn't care which faction of Transformer he captures to put the energy absorbers into the Combaticons.
Yeah, he's kind of equal opportunity. I'm going to screw everybody
basically,
over at this point. Yeah, he's pretty much pissed at the world.
Yeah. Shockwave contacts Megatron and informs him that the renegade Decepticons have been liberated. Megatron assumes that the Autobots did it, and he heads to their base to get back what is his. Megatron, Skywarp, Dirge, and Thrust attack the Autobots, and Megatron demands that the Autobots give back the personalities of the renegade Decepticons. I'm going to continue with the second one because it would make more sense, the next bullet point.
Yeah.
Optimus Prime demands that the Decepticons give back Jazz and Cliffjumper. Megatron has no idea what Prime is talking about and realizes that maybe it wasn't the Autobots that stole the personalities. Megatron and the other Decepticons are waiting for Starscream at a train yard when the sniveling bot shows up and introduces his army, the Combaticons, and they are going to destroy Megatron. How does it slip through Megatron and Shockwave? How does it slip through Shockwave that Starscream has gone to Cybertron, he has used the space bridge, which opens into the chamber that Shockwave is always in? Now, granted, Shockwave's probably out getting drunk on Energon or something like that.
He had to pee.
Yeah, he had to pee.
He had to step out to pee.
He had to do a bumblebee oil leak from TF07. I'm going to leak on your head.
That's right. I need a government agent. I just got to pee on him.
I need a Sector 7 agent.
What kills me, though, is that Starscream walks up to the space bridge and says, yeah, I'm kind of going through. And Thundercracker and Skywarp are there, and they're like, no, you're not. And he points the gun at his head and says, yeah, I am.
Yeah.
At this point, why didn't they just redirect him deep into space? Say, yeah, sure, have fun, and you're going to be trapped in the the space bridge buffer until hell freezes
now,
over.
See, that's the other thing that doesn't make any sense to me. The space bridge in G1, they don't actually... I mean, Shockwave, when they first introduced the space bridge in the first season, Shockwave says, you know, it has to have a receiving code. It has to have this, it has to have that, it has to be precise timing. But every other episode after that with a space bridge, we're automatically supposed to assume that it is set to Cybertron, and that's exactly where whoever goes through is going to it. It doesn't mention anything about not concentrating anymore, about not, you know, whatever else.
At this point it's just an elevator.
Yeah, pretty much.
You push the button, it goes bing, and you walk in, and the door opens again, and there you are.
Yep.
And assuming Shockwave's not taking a pee, there he is too.
Yes, exactly. Starscream is saved by Swindle, who fires upon Soundwave, but hits the light in the train yard. Oh, yeah. He hits the lights in the train yard, going dark, allowing the others to escape. However, Dirge and Ramjet are injured, and that brings the absorber count to 4.
You know what I don't understand is, you know, Swindle being Swindle, I'm really surprised he's not going over there with a wrench, just ripping out energy absorbers. It's like, these are all mine now. I'm gonna sell these to the nearest Transylvanian general. I'll see you later.
I don't think Swindle has gotten his full personality yet, but that will come in season 3. When he tries to go up against Galvatron, that was a bad idea. That was a really bad idea. At the water and power plant, Starscream and the Combaticons are recharging when Megatron attacks. Megatron has the Constructicons merge into Devastator, but Starscream has prepared for this and tells the Combaticons to merge into Bruticus. I'm trying to remember who was Bruticus's alter, like Autobot alter, because I've noticed something with all.
I thought that was Defensor.
Bruticus Defensor. Yeah, you're right.
But you notice earlier in the episode, I think it was Megatron says, "Hey, Stunicons, you know you got to show up for this," and they're like, "Screw you, man."
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that's foresight because you know basically. You have the Constructicons who merge to form Devastator, and then Bruticus merges and promptly beats the snot out of Devastator. Devastator being the first and therefore the weakest of the combiners. But, you know, the Stunicons don't show up until later.
Yeah, they show up at the very end and save Megatron's ass. Actually, that's the last bullet point. The Stunticons finally arrive to save Megatron from Bruticus. They unite to Menasor And after Menasor attacks Bruticus, Megatron has Astrotrain banish Starscream and his army to a barren asteroid, thus ending this episode. Now for our thoughts on this episode. This was a pretty good episode. It gave us somewhat climactic end to the Starscream-Megatron power struggle. The animation and sound was solid. As I've said many times before, the production on the show has gotten increasingly better over the first two seasons. I think I mentioned this in the last episode of the podcast. As I said before, there's a major continuity flub. The Combaticons were in an Aerialbots episode before they were even built. And then the only other notes I have is just what I already said in the synopsis about who the Combaticons are. What are your thoughts, Michael?
Like I said earlier, the last five of season two are some of my favorite episodes in Starscream's Brigade, and the following, the follow-up, The Revenge of Bruticus, are probably two of my favorites, period. I really love the Bruticus character, but there's not a whole lot of characterization there. He's just like, I'm big and dumb. But I really like the toys. The Bruticus mold and the following later on, the Ruination mold, are some of my all-time favorites. Really dig those. So this is really a cool cool idea. And it really introduces some ideas that kind of make their way even further into the mythos.
Does the Bruticus toy have the three spots on his back?
You don't know.
We'll get into that more in the Revenge of Bruticus, but I mean...
He's got, the twin cannons that ride on the back of the semi-truck in vehicle mode, those plug into his back. So technically he's only got two, big dots, or two holes, I should say, and that's where the cannons plug in. I should probably pull it out just to look, but no, I don't think they are there. Which is strange, because I think in the cartoon, and again, this is The Revenge of Bruticus, but I think in the cartoon, they show the three spots, but they don't really show the cannons, which I thought was strange.
No, I don't think so either.
Yeah. They conveniently remove them for that.
On to the next episode.
Identify yourselves!
Some refer to us as Combaticons, but...
I am also known as Bruticus.
Destroy him!
You control giant sentinels. If you destroyed, robots defeated.
I must protect Cybertron from all hostile threats.
Bruticus outnumber, but Bruticus will win. Mission accomplished. Cybertron is ours.
Operation Revenge has begun.
Up next is The Revenge of Bruticus. To go to the little booklet, we have Starscream abandons his team immediately following the events of Starscream's Brigade, but the Combaticons have their own ideas, such as taking over Cybertron and destroying Earth. And the Autobots' new merge group, the Protectobots, may not be enough to stop them. Let's see. We begin this episode as Starscream and the Combaticons are still on the exiled asteroid. Starscream can no longer stand it, and he flies off into space. Blastoff is towing the asteroid to Cybertron, where Shockwave is testing the holographic imaging machine. Now, why I called it a holographic imaging machine instead of a projector, I don't know why. Maybe I, at the time, was not realizing how the hell to spell projector, but I don't know.
It makes holographs. Looking back on the asteroid, I understand that, you have a lot of stuff to do and you can only cram it into a 22-minute episode, but, it almost seems like Starscream is there about 15 minutes and he goes, screw you guys, I'm going home. And then almost immediately then, Blastoff begins towing the asteroid back to Cybertron. And, you know, didn't they confer a little bit and say, oh, you know, all right, I'm Starscream says, I'm going to leave. And, you know, Blastoff says, well, I was going to tow us back to Cybertron. You sure you don't want to stick around? You know, because that would be cool, too. And,
you know. No, I think he was already towing it because it was moving.
Oh.
He was.
Well, they got there pretty quick.
Well, yeah, he got there pretty quick. But, I mean, I think when the episode first starts off,
they're already being towed.
He's already towing them. So I just don't think they clued in Starscream as to where they were
what
going.
They were doing exactly.
Yeah, where they
were
going.
That would make sense, considering that Starscream can fly through space, that he would be there towing as well.
Yeah, really.
So you've got Shockwave there with his cone-headed minions, and they're shooting at you know, holographs or holographic enemies flying around, and I was kind of concerned as far as why the drones look so bad. You know, nowadays Decepticon drones are kind of a given. You know, because you have the Transformers video game that came out with the Transformers movie in 07. Yeah. But back then, drones, there was no such thing as drones. It's like, what are these? Why can't we have Seekers as drones? You know, wouldn't it make sense that there'd be a small army of multicolored Seekers there? That would have been much more cool.
Yeah, it would have been cooler, but it wouldn't make any sense because the animators would have gotten all the color schemes wrong.
That's the beauty of it. That's how you end up with Sunstorm.
I'm talking about like Starscream and his colors having Thundercracker's voice and vice versa. That's what I'm talking about.
That's fine too. That can all be retconned.
Yeah, that's true. Then the asteroid carrying the Combaticons arrives and on Cybertron. Shockwave and his drones are defeated by Bruticus. The giant robot takes Shockwave, puts him in his cannon on his back, and shoots him into deep space. On Earth...
That was after he picks up in gun mode and actually guns down all of the head robots.
Well, that's why I said that, you know, Shockwave and his drones are defeated by Bruticus. And then
technically the drones are defeated by Shockwave.
No, the drones are shockwaves.
What?
The drones.
No. The drones aren't shockwaves.
Yes, the Cybertronian drones. Shockwave has control over them.
Oh, granted. All right, yeah, fine. So they're not exactly autonomous.
Next time you record with me, you are going to be sober, sir.
I am thoroughly sober, sir. I am, like I said, I'm fine. I can drive. It's cool. But the other thing I was going to mention was the fact that when Bruticus is grabs a hold of Shockwave and picks him up and says, you know, you control the giant Sentinel robots. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, there's no giant Sentinel robots here. There's just little shrimpy cone heads.
Yeah, we don't.
Wouldn't
see
it be cool though if Bruticus had to fight maybe a dozen like Omega Supremes in the blue and silver?
Yeah,
that would have been awesome. But you know, again with the animation errors, they would have all been the wrong color.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have cared. It still would have been cool.
On Earth, the Insecticons and Decepticons are draining energy, and the Autobots arrive to stop their plan. However, the Insecticons have multiplied and are invading an inhabited neighborhood. The next bullet point says, the Autobots cannot fight them with all the humans around at the Autobot base. Perceptor is showing Spike the universe and explaining that it goes on forever and ever. This next part of the bullet point says, it should be noted, as Spike and Perceptor are looking at this, it shows Shockwave is tumbling through space when he collides into Starscream, and they attempt to team up to regain control of Cybertron from the Combaticons.
Yeah, while you were looking over there at the Dog Star, did you happen to notice that giant purple gun
floating
through space?
Exactly.
Going back, I was going to say the Insecticons. First of all, I hate Insecticon armies because it's like, you know, there should only be three, first of all, and they shouldn't be able to multiply. You know, because first of all, it's kind of dumb. And second of all, you would think with an army that size, they could easily overtake the Autobots. Because the Decepticons are always whining about, there's too many of them, we're being overrun. You have an army of Insecticons, and all they do is eat. I mean, they could land on the Autobots and just eat them.
The thing that I find strange about all the different factions of Decepticons, whether those be Combiners, loyal, non-loyal, whether they be Insecticons, Predacons, whatever, Megatron, especially in G1, Megatron doesn't trust anyone other than, like, Soundwave and his little cassette deck things.
Yeah, his immediate family.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, the Insecticons I really don't care for myself. One of my very first, which I no longer have, which I don't even care to have, one of my very first Transformers toys when I was a kid was Bombshell. I thought Bombshell was cool as hell.
They're very cool characters.
Yeah.
But again,
the army
there should
is
only
the problem.
Be three.
Yes.
Yeah. If there was just three of them, I'd be okay. But there's the animation shows like dozens floating through the air.
Yeah, I know.
And then they have to evacuate the humans, and Optimus Prime says, you know, protect the bots, get out here and help us.
Yep.
And they're all hanging out in a garage. They just drive out of the garage. Hi.
This is also another instance of where the fuck do the Protectobots come from? According to the key to Vector Sigma, you have to go there. I mean, anybody can build robots, but in order for them to get cybernetic personalities, you have to go to the Vector Sigma for them to get it. So where the hell did the Protectobots
come from?
Yeah, I don't have any idea.
See, for some reason, I was thinking that the Matrix of leadership could bestow
it wasn't
life.
The Matrix wasn't introduced yet.
Well, no, it wasn't considered the Matrix until the movie. But it was the fact that Optimus Prime, because he was Prime, he was able to do that.
No, and I'm not even gonna go with last week's episode and the Primer Prime. We're not even gonna go there.
The Primer Prime. You just made that
thank,
up.
Thank
no, I
God.
Didn't.
Thank God. In the,
now you're just being contradictory. No, I'm not. Yes, you are. No, I'm not.
In the episode of Prime Problem, when Megatron clones Optimus, thank God they did not use it in that, because that would just be so cheesy. Lord. On Cybertron, the Combaticons realize that the Decepticon technology has advanced so much since their imprisonment. Spike and Perceptor reach Prime and inform him that the energy signals coming from Cybertron show that Earth's orbit has been altered and it is heading straight for the sun. Can anybody say Megatron's master plan?
How many times are we going to do this? You'd think by now we would have built heat shields around the whole damn planet.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, this marks the second time, as far as I know, that some evildoer, whether it be Megatron and the rest of the Decepticons, or some Renegades, or Insecticons, whatever have you, that try to send either the Autobots or the Earth into the sun.
Well, it's either that, or heat up the sun, or explode the sun, thus baking the Earth just as much.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Or bringing Cybertron into Earth's orbit, creating all kinds of, you know, storms.
They only did that once.
Well, yeah, they only did it once, but actually, they do it, they don't show the effects of Earth, but it's something I've noticed throughout the series. If you look at that episode, The Ultimate Doom, and you look at Rebirth, exact same thing. Megatron in The Ultimate Doom is going to bring Cybertron into Earth's orbit. Galvatron in Rebirth builds a rocket onto Cybertron and shoots the planet to Earth.
Okay.
But anyway, I digress. The Autobots head for the space bridge, but Megatron has the Insecticons steal the space bridge controller and escape with it. Back on Cybertron, Shockwave and Starscream have tricked the Combaticons with the holographic projector. Well, I actually used a holographic projector. Anyway.
You figured out how to spell it.
Yeah,
time.
Really. Ain't that the truth?
Yeah. But they actually, you know, run out of energy fighting the fake holographically projected enemies.
Yes, they do. They retake the transport chamber, but Shockwave finds out that the space bridge receiver has been altered to send the Earth into the sun. Shockwave attempts to correct this issue, but Starscream blasts him. He also attempts to contact Megatron, and that's why Starscream blasts him. On Earth, the Autobots are still looking for the bridge control when later in the episode, Starscream calls Megatron and issues him an ultimatum.
This is when Starscream still has the upper hand.
Yes, exactly. Okay, I remember that now. It's been a while. on Cybertron, the Combaticons realize that they've been had.
Yeah, this, like I said, right when they decide that, Starscream loses his upper hand.
Yes, exactly, and they go all berserker. Yes, that was a Clerks reference.
I was just thinking, my love is like a
berserker.
Would you like to make a fuck? Did he just say making fuck?
He said making fuck. The Autobots... The Autobots and Decepticons on Earth realize that they'll have to work together in order to stop Starscream and the Combaticons. Once on Cybertron, the combined efforts of the warring factions release Starscream and Shockwave, but the Combaticons come in and demand that Starscream is their prisoner. A battle begins, and Starscream tells Optimus Prime of the three spots on Bruticus's back that will deactivate him, thus beginning the lies. Because... And I will get into this at the very end of the episode, because it is shown that Starscream somehow devises a plan to trick the Autobots into believing that Bruticus is deactivated. Now, maybe, possibly, when Optimus shoots the three things, maybe it paralyzes him. Kind of like the only comparison I can think of is when Obadiah Stane uses that little paralyzer gadget on Tony in Iron Man. But obviously Optimus wasn't that close.
To completely geek out here, it might be the equivalent of the Vulcan nerve pinch.
Oh my god.
You like, and he drops.
You start.
He kind of drools a little bit.
You fucking Trekkie.
Oh, please. Like, you've never watched Star Trek.
I know what it was, but I'm not, like, one of these obsessed fans. I actually was staying a weekend at a foster home when I was younger, and the foster father was a huge, like, one of these, oh, my God, I can't, you know, mint in box, and blah, 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 and this, that, and the other. I'm like, oh, my God. Yeah, I only touched the box, and it didn't even move. I just touched it to look at it. It wasn't like I was opening the fucking thing. Anyway.
You got finger grease on
it. Yeah, really.
Ain't that the truth.
Yeah.
I can relate.
It destroyed its, like, like 4,000 of its $10,000 value. Anyway.
That's terrible.
The Earth is saved, and Prime says that Bruticus is a menace to both Autobots and Decepticons. Megatron has Starscream destroy him, or so it would seem. The episodes with the Autobots returning... The episode ends with the Autobots returning to Earth and Megatron praising Starscream for his plan to allow the Autobots to think that Bruticus has been destroyed.
Because Starscream used the holographic projector to make it look like he was blown up.
Yep.
When in fact they were... And Optimus Prime is remarking on the way out the door... Well, Megatron was awful nice about showing us the way out and not having the door smack us in the ass as we were leaving. That's because they were hiding Bruticus behind the curtain there.
Yep.
Pay no attention to the giant mega combiner robot gestalt thingy behind the curtain.
Yep, thus ending this episode. Now for our thoughts on this episode. For me, there really isn't a lot of notes. I actually should mention, I forgot about the last bullet point in the synopsis, which says, Megatron tells Starscream that he may return to Earth as his subordinate, and they will rebuild Bruticus to obey only Megatron.
And actually has his head pulled open. So that,
yes, it does.
His brain pan exposed. So that they can, reprogram him to only obey Megatron.
Yes, exactly. I liked the ending to the episode. It shows, once again, how underhanded and sneaky the Decepticons really are. I just can't get past the continuity error. That really is bugging me. That has got to be my biggest gripe about this kind of two-parter episode, especially when you've already previewed them in a previous one that they weren't even built yet. So, what about you?
Well, I kind of dig Starscream's mentality when he's like, I'm just going to send the entire planet to the sun. And, you know, Shockwave says, well, Megatron's on it. And Starscream says, cool. You know, that's fine. Yeah. So he calls Megatron and says, you know, I'm just going to send you and everybody else hurtling into the sun if that's cool. You know, and Megatron's like, no, no, you don't. And but the clincher here is when Starscream says, you know, I'm going to rule the universe, and I don't care if I'm the only one in it. You know, it's going to happen, buddy.
Yeah.
But that to me kind of sums it up for Starscream.
Yeah.
Which is why it's so, you know, so anticlimactic at the end when Megatron turns to Starscream and says, we're going back to Earth, and you're going to be my bitch. And Starscream thanks him for it.
Yes, basically. It should be noted that the sending Earth into the sun thing was not Starscream's idea, though. It was on the... That's how the Combaticons were going to get rid of Megatron, the Autobots, and the entire planet.
Because they're on the revenge list.
And they're on the revenge list. And Starscream just took credit for it.
Well, you know, it kind of fit in. You know, he's thinking, I could do without a planet, and if Megatron's on it, all the better. You know?
Exactly.
Works for me. But yeah, that really summed up Starscream for me in a nutshell, that episode.
Yeah, Starscream is one of those very clear-cut characters. There's no depth to him whatsoever. And you know what he's about. He's about being, like I've said in several of the descriptions, a sniveling little Decepticon. That's all he is. He wants what he wants, when he wants it, and he attempts stupidly to go after it most of the time, and he ends up at the end of the giant fusion cannon.
At the wrong end of a giant fusion cannon.
Yes, at the wrong end of the giant fusion cannon.
That's right.
All right, on to the next episode.
Check out the TV news. That guy there works at the optics plant those Stunticons raided.
And at first, I thought those driverless cars were Autobots.
Wild, huh, Optimus? Stunticons mistake it for Autobots?
Yes, and it's given me an idea.
I hope this camouflage paint comes off, Jazz.
Oh, quit griping. You're still the same sideswipe inside, right?
How do I look, Ratchet?
Your own designer wouldn't know you, Windcharger.
Man, Optimus, you're a dead ringer for Motormaster.
Did you have to say dead ringer, Spike?
They're ready, Optimus. The new Stunticons. Breakdown, alias Sideswipe. Dead End, alias Jazz. Wild Rider, alias Windcharger. And Dragstrip?
Dragstrip? A.K.A. Mirage.
One stolen ruby. Red, wasn't it?
Okay, then we're ready. But remember, the success of this mission depends on absolute secrecy. Under no circumstances must you follow us or break radio silence. Understood?
Yeah, but I don't have to like it.
All right then, Stunticons, let's roll for it. Map that critter is less than a mile away.
Can't get there too soon for me.
Me too, Windcharger. I'm anxious to dent some Decepticon metal.
From now on, I suggest we call each other by our assumed names, Breakdown.
Cool it, we got company. Laserbeak.
Let's test our disguises on him.
He doesn't have to overdo it.
Laserbeak didn't attack, so maybe we fooled him. But the real trick is fooling Megatron.
I don't like being a Stunticon.
Hey, man, zip that lip!
Strange, isn't it, Megatron? How safely the Stunticons drive today?
So as not to damage their stolen cargo, Starscream.
Perhaps.
Have your Stunticons brought all the components, Motormaster? Hey, would I let you down?
Something something wrong with your vocalizer, Motor Master? You sound strained.
Too much shouting, I guess. What of the other components? We got them all, Megatron! Destroy these fake Stunticons! The stolen components are in place, and the weapon but minutes from completion. And then...
And then what?
What was all that noise? Great Cybertron!
Looks like an earthquake hit him.
Yeah, Spike. And judging from those empty cells, it was an earthquake named Menasor.
Oh, my. Anybody get the number of that clanking disaster?
We'll be fine.
It is complete. The most destructive weapon known to Decepticon science. Constructicons, you are dismissed.
Perhaps you should not have dismissed them just yet, Megatron.
As always, Starscream, you miss the obvious. The weapon is complete, and the Autobots are totally unaware of its very existence.
Are they indeed?
Say, boss, what's that weapon gonna do anyway? What? You've forgotten already? Memory banks must have got jumbled. Too many head-on collisions. Utilizing that ruby's light, focused through those perfect lenses, it will fire the most destructive ray of all. More powerful than any laser, it will create a chain reaction in whatever it touches, producing instantaneous destruction. Imagine my turning that ray on the Autobots' headquarters. Perhaps when it's gone, someone will put up a memorial parking lot.
What are we waiting for?
Megatron! Megatron! Quick! Menasor! But...
What's the matter, Megatron? Missing the obvious?
I, Megasor! The Autobots!
Those Stunticons are imposters!
No! He's the imposter! What? Menasor fake? There's one absolute test, Stunticons! Merge and become Menasor! You heard him, guys!
Well, we're waiting!
Stunticons! Merge!
Impossible!
Two Menasors? Can't be! I, Menasor! Me!
As long as my magnetic field holds.
And I can keep this phony face.
Real Menasor has special powers.
Yes, powers to destroy!
The generator.
It's ready! Ready to be tested on the imposter! In other words, whichever Menasor loses the fight!
No need for the disguises anymore! Autobots, transform!
Up next is Masquerade. And, according to the little booklet, it says, Megatron is assembling a new device and sends the Stunticons out to procure the needed parts. Learning of these missions, Optimus Prime, Windcharger, Mirage, Jazz, and Sideswipe intercept the Stunticons and imprison them in the Ark. The Autobots disguise themselves as the Stunticons to discover and thwart Megatron's plans. And Michael is going to be taking over the synopsis that I wrote, so he can butcher it as much as he wants. I really don't care.
I get free reign.
Yes.
Carte blanche.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so we'll begin the episode with Megatron sending the Stunticons out to retrieve three components to build some sort of weapon. They don't actually say what kind of weapon it is. They just send them out there. And Starscream even remarks, are you sure it's a good idea to send these guys out there? Because they really don't know their own ass from a hole in the ground. And Megatron says, they have very unique configurations, so they're the guys. You have anything to say about the initial plot line?
No, not really. It's just... I'll have more to say once we...
get into it?
Once we get into it, because I'm reading it through as you're
okay.
Breaking it down.
Okay. So, basically, we have the Autobots see the Stunticons. They say, oh, well, you know, we have five Decepticons going at ground level. Bingo, it's Decepticons, or Stunticons.
Yeah.
And they head out to stop whatever that they are doing.
Yep, pretty much. Hoist and Grapple, I swear. Between Hoist and Grapple and Red Alert and Inferno. I don't know if you listened to my other episode when... it was a while back. They are the four gay G1 characters. I swear to God.
You see, at this point, they've run out of voices. You know, they try different voices. You know, you've got Casey Kasem, and you've got Dan Gilvezan,
yeah.
And, you know, Cullen doing Prime and Ironhide, and they sound enough different where, you know, you can tell them apart. But by the time you get to 40 characters, 40 Autobots or so, you got to go with inflections or, you know, key phrases, catchphrases like Warpath, Boom, Zam, Pow.
Yeah.
Because at that point, they all start to sound the same.
Yeah,
and if you
do.
Didn't have some with a gay lisp, you know, then you wouldn't understand who's who.
I'm not even talking about the voices being gay. I'm talking about the actual characters. Just the way that they come off.
Oh, I thought it was just their
no,
voices.
No, not the voices. Not at all the voices. The characters themselves. But anyway, the basic plot of this is that the Stunticons are captured by the Autobots. And the Autobots have... Jazz has this cool kind of paint thing. And Sunstreaker's like, oh, it's not going to mess up my beautiful chassis, is it? No, it washes right off. You know, and...
You're passing up the most epic part.
Which would be?
Wow. When the Autobots, you know, they split up in their special teams, which... is pretty much, you know, a rather large toy commercial, because they introduce all these different... maybe not introduce, but they bring in out a lot of different characters. But they catch everybody, but Optimus gets Motormaster.
Yeah.
And the way he does it is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, just playing chicken.
Well, but I guess it's playing chicken, but I mean, it's like this huge epic head-on collision where it's fire, smoke, brimstone, nobody can see what's going on, everyone's wondering if Prime is dead. You know Prime's not dead. But the fact that it's like, oh, he could be, you know, and then they draw it out for about a minute.
Just wait another year, he'll be dead.
Give it time. Oh, the smoke is cleared, and oh, he's in black and white. Oh, no. Daniel cries. Ah. Anyway. So yeah, but Optimus wins.
Yeah,
and you know, for me, that especially as a little kid, how cool was that?
It's oh like, yeah,
fuck yeah! Optimus Prime won; he kicked his ass.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, so suffice to say, Stunticons are captured, and the Autobots get this great idea that they are going to disguise themselves as the Stunticons in order to figure out what Megatron is actually up to, because they have these pieces of this weapon, but they don't really know what it's for.
Yep.
So they head to this crater where the Decepticons are hiding, and the Constructicons are there building this super weapon. You know, Prime and the crew drive up, but they never bother to see, you know, exactly. Well, they're all fools, what it comes down to. They don't say, what's the password? Well, there is no password. Security is so lax that this group of, you know, poorly disguised. Autobots just drives into their base.
Well, I do have to say that the paint and all that stuff and the change over from their original molds to the impersonation colors, it was pretty much spot on. And out of all of the Decepticons, the only one that voices concern is Starscream. He actually says that, you know...
He was the smart one this time.
Yeah, exactly. Probably the only time in the entire series. Well, whatever. Yeah.
No, he is smart. He was a scientist.
Yeah.
And he's never one to not tell everybody that he's the smart one.
Yes, exactly. So long story short, the Constructa Stunta. I don't know what the hell I was gonna say.
Well, the Constructicons left. The Stunticons are there.
Yeah.
The fake Stunticons are there, and suddenly the real Stunticons show up.
And they both merge. Now, I have a problem merge. With if this is supposed to be just paint on the Autobots. How the hell can they merge?
Big magnets.
Yeah?
Big magnets. They're holding on for dear life, you know. You realize if you don't hold on really tight, we're all going to die. I'm holding on, man. Hanging on the best I can.
And then then Soundwave pipes up and says, real Minasaur has special powers. We never knew anything about real Minasaur having special powers.
Yeah.
And what he brings out is a big fucking sword. Oh, give me a break.
No, I think he shot him with his underarm cannons.
Forearm
cannons. Underarm makes it sound like pit missiles.
They killed him with B.O.
Oh, it's like, P.U. Okay, all right, we give up. All right, we give up. And, they probably, the Autobots, once they were found out, you know, they probably would have had their asses handed to them. But they had reinforcements showing up. And once again, you know, Megatron and crew decide that they are outnumbered. And Minasaur in particular, you'd think with Minasaur there and the Constructicons not too far away at that point, that it would have been fairly easy for them to gang up on the entire Autobot army and just waste them right there.
Didn't Megatron and the rest of the Decepticons leave Minasaur to deal with them? And then Minasaur said, oh no, you're not leaving me, and then he flies off?
I didn't really catch it that way, but maybe.
I thought that's what happened. I don't know. I'd have to go back and watch it, and I'm too lazy for that right now.
Well, still, when the Autobots do disassemble, they pretty much pour everything they've got into Minasaur. Even the shoulder missiles are firing, and nothing is doing any good against Minasaur. So I'm thinking, you know, he probably could have taken them.
Yeah, probably could have.
Even with the reinforcements.
Yeah, probably.
But regardless, see, this would have been a good thing to introduce those Decepticon clones.
Oh.
The cone heads.
Yeah, that's
it's like,
true.
Well, yeah, see, now we're not outmatched now. Now we've got a small army of cone heads. And we're going to call it right here. We're going to right here and now.
Yep. So that pretty much ends the synopsis for this episode. Now for our thoughts on this episode. This was very cool seeing the Autobots disguised as Decepticons. Not sure if that has happened before this episode, which I don't think it has. I remember the Decepticons disguised themselves as the Autobots in Megatron's master plan. But it is nice seeing the Autobots thinking outside the box. There was one animation flub I noticed at the end where Starscream and Soundwave retreat. Soundwave transforms into his tape deck mode and flies next to Starscream. What the fuck? That has never happened before. Anytime you see Soundwave's wife. Yeah, really.
Yeah, she's got a really huge tape deck.
Let's not even go there. Dirty old man, let's not even go there. We're not going there.
We can edit that out in post, right?
Yeah. No, we don't edit anything over here. We leave it all in. We let it hang all out. It's like Jim Carrey said in Liar Liar. How's it hanging? Short, shriveled, and always to the left. But you never see in the entire series any time that Soundwave is flying, whether he's flying next to Megatron, whether he's flying next to Dirge, Astrotrain, whatever. He's always in robot mode. You never see him in tape deck mode. Never. Unless he's on top of somebody. Like if like if Starscream is flying at level and Soundwave is in tape deck mode sitting on top of the jet.
Yeah, maybe perched on there getting
around. That I can believe, but yeah. A flying tape deck? I don't fucking think so.
Not so much.
No, not so much. So what are your thoughts on this episode?
I kind of dig it. I like the whole premise. What I was wondering is, why wouldn't at some point Megatron try the same thing? I mean, literally, you've got Superion, the aerial bots, right? And right. And they're the best flyers that the Autobots have, but the Decepticon army has plenty of Seekers that they could easily just repaint and make them look like the aerial bots, and then wander in, you know, directly into their camp. I think that would be really cool. Honestly, what would be really neat is to see some Kit Bashers take the a Superion, and maybe an older one, and maybe even a newer one, like an Energon, a Superion Maximus, you know, and repaint him into Seeker colors. Repaint the limbs into Seeker colors. I mean, that would be really neat. That would be a really cool thing I'd like to see.
Yeah. I'm not really sure. I actually think, I'm trying to remember what episode it was. There was an episode where earlier in season two, that Ironhide and a whole bunch of other Autobots have to go to Cybertron, and Megatron is going to hurt them with acid rain, because apparently acid corrodes only the Autobots, and they have like three Cybertronian jets. One is white, one is red, and one is green. And I made a note in that episode, are these three the future Cybertronian molds of Dirge, Thrust, and Ramjet? Because that's the other thing. You never see where Dirge, Thrust, and Ramjet come from.
Right.
Never see that.
Actually, the green one was Acid Rain. Or Acid Storm. I think at a BotCon, they mentioned that they wanted to name him Acid Rain or something like that. But they ended up with the name Acid Storm.
Oh, okay.
That's the green one. It was Transformer, the Classics line. They had a green Seeker.
Oh, okay. Well,
it was named Acid Storm. It was supposed to have been that one from that particular episode.
Uh-huh. You have any more thoughts on Masquerade?
Actually, no. I think I've diverged enough from the topic. Thanks.
All right. On to the last episode.
Let's go.
You know what we ought to do for the science project?
What?
Build our own robot. Yeah. Whose idea was it to look for parts in the dump?
Well, we can't afford to buy parts, and there's lots of perfectly good junk here, so I think that...
Save it.
But look at this. I bet this is good for something. I don't know what just yet, but... What's going to happen if they catch us? We're going to be expelled.
I'm still not too sure we can do it.
Hey, guys, I got a name. I call it a Biotronic Operational Telecommunicator, which pretty much describes its function.
If you say so.
If you take the first letter of each word, you get bot. Also short for robot, bot.
And... this will be the final episode of Season 2, the very anticlimactic bot. To synopsize this episode, in a battle with Defensor, 4 out of the 5 Combaticons are damaged and Swindle sells off their parts. A group of high school students get Brawl's personality component and install it in their science project robot called Bot. And it's like biometric... Optotronics. I don't even remember what it...
Telecommunications? Bio...
Biometric optical telecommunications something or other. I don't remember what it was.
I don't remember either. I do know that it's bears an uncanny resemblance to the Beast Wars Neo Unicron toy. If you're familiar with that, you know.
I've seen pictures.
It's just a big round ball. But what kills me is that the high school students are the two Corys,
yep,
of 80s fame, Corey Feldman and Corey Haim.
Yep.
I can't prove it. I'm sure they didn't get paid royalties for this. But you look at them, and you know, the one Corey has this horrible rictus grin plastered onto his face the entire episode, and the other one has this horrible mullet looking thing, and you know it's Haim.
Yeah, I think the only thing that I've seen either one of them in, I actually have the DVD of it. Corey Haim was in a movie called Double O Kid, and that is the only thing I've seen him in, and it's the only thing I will ever own of theirs on out of either one of them on DVD.
Well, that's because you don't like scary movies. You know, you go back far enough into the Friday the 13th line, and you end up, I believe it was Corey Feldman. Corey Feldman as, I forget his name, but some kid who ends up in several episodes.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. So let's see.
And the Lost Boys.
The Lost Boys.
No Lost Boys in this episode. Whatever.
Yeah, no.
But to digress, I'm sorry.
To make a long story short, the Autobots need to stop the robot that the kids have made before it destroys the school. In searching for the missing part to the Combaticons, Megatron put a bomb in Swindle's head that will explode in 15 hours unless he can get the Combaticons rebuilt and merge into Bruticus. Metatron. What the hell is a meta? That is from freaking Dogma. Jesus Christ. Kevin Smith on the brain. Hello. Megatron's plan in this episode is to blast the moon out of the sky so that the Decepticons can control the oceans of the Earth. Okay.
That's what that was for.
Yes. Okay. The kids listen to Brawl's communicator and find out about the Decepticon plan. And then they warn the Autobots, who call in the Protectobots.
Yeah, that's what kills me, though, is the fact that, you know, you basically have these kids, and they're digging through the garbage dump for junk that they can build their robot with. And they end up finding, you know, Brawl's personality component, which looks like, you know, a Turing device or something. An Enigma machine, you know, from World War II, kind of. Except with all the keys. You know, I don't think we covered how exactly the pieces ended up in... Oh, yeah, we did. Yeah, the Combaticons were damaged, and Swindle sells off the parts.
Yes, Swindle sells off the parts, and somehow...
To the Transylvanian general.
Yeah, or the Carbamia general, whichever you prefer.
Let's see later on, I'm jumping ahead here, but when he actually has to retrieve the parts, Swindle attacks the Russian army.
Yeah, that is true.
So it's like, are they Russians? Are they Transylvanians? Are they Carbamians?
They're foreigners.
I thought Carbamia was more Middle East, whereas this was definitely somewhere snowy like Siberia.
Yeah, it could be. Plus, I think Carbamia comes in... Actually, it came in an episode earlier this season, but it also comes more into play in season 3.
A car bomb. You would never get away with that nowadays.
No, not really. The kids are in the Autobot headquarters. They use Teletran 1 to gain control of the Decepticon weapon and fire it upon them, causing them to retreat. After the battle is over, the girl that helped out with the other two boys asks them for spare parts... so they can build another robot, to which the boys grab some duct tape, put it over her mouth, and leave the base, thus ending the final episode of Season 2.
Because there's always duct tape available. 1,001 uses.
Especially in a base with giant fucking robots.
Because that's what Ratchet uses to repair the giant fucking robots.
Exactly.
We got duct tape, don't we? Ah, here we go. Sorry about this. we're gonna duct tape your voice box back. I hope that works for you. You'll probably not be able to speak except through, you know, radio chatter, but the duct tape, you know, works in 99.9% of the cases.
Oh my god, that's funny.
Sorry about that. But you know what? I wanted to bring something else up about the kids. The kids, you know, basically are the most annoying part of this episode and pretty much any other episode where you have humans involved. But I guess we can... I'll cover that later under our thoughts.
Yes. So we are going to go on to our thoughts. Now for our thoughts on this episode. As I said in the very beginning of the synopsis, this was a very anticlimactic season ender. at least with Heavy Metal War in Season 1, we got some suspense as if the Decepticons would return or not. Or, I should say, when they would return. But this just, well, sucked balls, to quote Birdman Dodd. It reminded me of Autobot Spike, the episode that actually began Season 2, which I hated that episode.
borrowed heavily from some classic American literature.
Well, and film. Frankenstein.
Yeah, exactly.
I
didn't like this episode.
I wish that they would have... Well, besides that, I wish that they would have thought more to the point of, hey, we have a movie coming up. We're going to be doing a movie in between a season set. So let's put a little spin on it. If they had added the Scramble... If they had actually Americanized the Scramble City Japanese episode introducing Ultra Magnus and all of them, if they had kind of tied it in...
Yeah.
A little bit. I mean, you end Season 2 on such a very bad fucking note...
Right.
...to the point where you don't know what's going to happen, and then you open the movie with Unicron and... I forget what they were freaking called. One of them was called Kranix.
Kranix, yeah.
On some strange planet. Yeah.
Ubulus.
Yeah. Ubulus. Yeah. Ubulus, it's Unicron! help me!
It's like, oh, fuck, I knew he was coming this way, but, yeah.
No. Help me save my multicolored Bunsen burners, for Christ's sake! Yeah, but we'll get into that.
To digress, I'm not entirely certain that these episodes were in the right order to begin with. I think maybe they were, kind of recorded in one order and then showed on TV in a different order. You mentioned before how Bruticus was introduced in an earlier episode, and it's entirely possible maybe that episode was the one that was supposed to be the season ender, and they just got flip-flopped.
It could have been.
I mean, I'm sure somebody knows out there. I'm not sure, but I'm just postulating.
I don't know either. I just know that, especially with a lot of, again, going back to my inspiration to even start the TFG1 podcast was a podcast I listened to called World's Finest Podcast, which is Michael... it's a plug, but I plug them all the time, so... I mean, my sockets are filled with plugs from Earth2.net, and, yeah, let's not even go... It's just a...
That sounds dirty.
Yeah, shut up. Anyway, the point is, they go by production order because it's easier for them.
Right.
Well, when I looked at the cartoons on the DVDs, I said, okay, well, this is how they're listed. I broke them up into either 4, 5, or 6 episodes per podcast episode, depending on, where the... I broke them up basically on the 2 to 5-part story.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want a 2-parter split up between podcast episodes. So that's how I broke them up, and that's how it kind of seems like they were out of context or whatever. But I
mean, they're still in production
up.
Order, though. Yeah, regardless of where you split between the episodes for podcast purposes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying that, it's entirely possible that maybe in Japan, Bot came before Cosmic Rust.
Aerial Assault is where the flub is. Aerial Assault has the Combaticons, not Cosmic Rust.
Well, that too. I'm saying Bot could have been anywhere. It may not have been the last episode. Maybe that was just how it ended up being.
But for this, for the U.S. set, and for this being, that's what it is.
Yeah, granted.
I just thought it was fucked up.
It is.
So what are your thoughts?
Well, I had a lot of thoughts. Starting with the beginning of the episode, they basically say, in a fight against Defensor and the Combaticons, as badass as the Combaticons are, Defensor kills him with one shot. Just, hey, there he is in the middle of the road. He's dead. And then as he walks off, he kind of remarks over his shoulder, call the streets and sand and tell them there's shit in the road. They gotta come pick it up. And I'm thinking, it's too bad that these episodes are so... short and tight, because this battle could have been easily 5-10 minutes. They could have rustled around and knocked some buildings over, Gojira style. But it's just one shot. Okay, boom. He's dead. Well, that was easy. Yeah, clean this shit up.
Yeah.
And granted, it's nice to see Swindle crawling out of the rubble and saying, "Ooh, I'm going to make some money." Yeah. But Swindle says, I think his exact words were, "Where am I going to get all the spare parts to rebuild these guys?" And in the end, he doesn't go out to find spare parts. He literally sells all the parts off. You know, so I think, I'm not sure if it was somewhere lost in the plot line, but you know, I think Swindle at one point intended to rebuild his buddies so that they could, you know, fight another day.
I seriously doubt that because of his nature. No, seriously. Yeah. I seriously doubt that because of his nature, because if you look at how the episode progresses,
yeah,
he doesn't even give it a second thought.
Doesn't feel the least bit bad about it. Not until they put a bomb in his head. Yeah,
exactly.
It's like, do you regret what you've done? Well, I regret having a bomb in my head.
Exactly.
Now I feel kind of crappy about it. And the whole time for the rest of the episode, you can hear it ticking. He's like the crocodile. Tick, 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 tick.
Yeah.
It's like, they're going to bomb in my head. It's pretty obvious, isn't it? Yeah. You hear something? Yeah, that's my fucking head. Yeah. But the other point that I wanted to make about this episode is the girl. You know, I kind of expected her to be a double agent the whole time because she's wearing Constructicon green and Decepticon purple in this horrible, horrible, like, 80s getup. I mean, the two Corias are in horrible, horrible 80s getups as well. But she looks particularly bad. And it's like, look at her. She's wearing Decepticon colors. You know she's evil. But in the end, she's not so much evil. She's just arrogant. Because the boys, even in the beginning, they're like, oh, please don't pair us up with her. Please don't pair us up with her. And they do, and the teacher was like, ha-ha, I'm screwing you guys by pairing you up with this nimwit. And at the end, you know, it's almost as if she has a redeeming moment. Because at the end, she's like, yes, I can program this robot to fire the giant laser against its creators. Because I can do anything. Mm-hmm. And at the end, it doesn't come across so much as her redeeming moment. It comes across as her saying, I'm an arrogant bitch.
Pretty much, yeah.
Did it come across that way for you? Because that's kind of what I got out of it.
See, now that you mention the fact that the guys could have basically been copied off the two Corys, I've been trying to, throughout your whole little speech there, Well, no, I'm not saying it in a bad way. I'm saying throughout your
my rant,
voicing
my
your
diatribe, yeah.
Yeah, I mean... My half-dead brain cells are trying to think of who the hell she could be as far as, like, an 80s-type Brat Pack model type of character.
Yeah.
Because at first, in the beginning of the episode, she wants nothing. She's, like, really skeptical. Oh, I don't know if we should do that. Kind of like the nerd scientist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really big stick in the mud. And then she ends up being almost a bit... To where the two guys,
yeah.
Well, yeah, smarter than they are, but all three of them are fairly smart. I mean, they're all, even though the guys try to act like jerks and jock types, they're all fairly smart because they even say in the episode, the guys are like, oh, yeah, we can do this and we can do that and this, that, and the other thing and everything else. And then, I don't know. But, yeah, she did kind of come off as a bitch at the end, and I'm glad they used the fucking duct tape. Even if we don't know where it came from.
That's right. I pulled this duct tape out of my... Yeah. Does this duct tape smell funny to you?
Yeah.
Well,
God.
That's Ratchick's duct tape. That's what he used to duct tape Bumblebee's voice box back in. Which is why you can only hear him through the radio. And this is going to lead into a giant Bay rant unless we just end it right here.
Yeah, we need to end this.
Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.
Yeah.
The Transformers will return after these messages.
The TFG1 podcast has all your 80s goodness with full coverage of the Generation 1 cartoon and beyond. This is Mike the Birdman Dodd saying live free or die hard and listen to this goddamn podcast.
Are you a fan of Transformers?
Yes.
Then be sure to visit PredaconEmpire.com, your resource for Transformers media and more. Also, be sure to check out our podcast, All Things Transformers and the TFG1 Podcast. I'm Steve/Megatron, inviting you to come join the fun on the shows and the forums. So be sure to visit PredaconEmpire.com for all your Transformers needs. Enter now.
Coming soon from PredaconEmpire.com, the M-Wire Movies Week in Review. Steve slash Megatron and I, Michael Blanchard, will sit down every week to review one movie that either one of us have picked. It is a genre-spanning movie review podcast that will be weekly. Look for it on PredaconEmpire.com and iTunes, coming soon.
We now return to the Transformers.
Alrighty, next time on the TFG1 podcast, Steve slash Megatron and I will be discussing Season 2 of the G1 cartoon. We will be discussing the overall good or badness of the season, and I'll be talking about the looks of the box sets and what's included with them. Yeah, box sets, let's not even get into that. Thank you for joining me on the TFG1 podcast. There are four ways to get in touch with me or leave feedback for the podcast. The first is that you can visit the PredaconEmpire.com forums and get all your Transformers discussion topics there. You should really do this, people. Do it now. Resistance is futile. The second is that you can follow me on Twitter. My name on there is TFG1Podcast. Michael, would you like to give your Twitter out?
Heck yeah. My listeners? Twitter is PecanCourtMichael. That's PecanCourtMichael. And I pronounce it Pecan Court because I, a long time ago, used to live on a street called Pecan Court.
But, I was wondering about that.
Yeah, yeah, it's abbreviated to CT. Because you know how hard it is to come up with a unique handle on AIM? So it's like, well, I live on Pecan Court. Technically, I could be Pecan Court Michael. And that's what I went with years ago.
Oh, okay.
So it's Pecan CT Michael on Twitter.com. Cool.
The third is you can visit the Earth-2.net forums. I have a thread over there for the podcast under the banter section. And the fourth is the email address, which is tfg1podcast@gmail.com. For now, I am Michael Blanchard with...
Michael Wilson.
Saying in the immortal words of Optimus Prime, transform and roll out, and thank you for listening. Until next time.